You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Clyburn Park, Bruce Norris's scathing satire of race relations in America, won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama last year after an off-Broadway run, and then the 2011 Oliver Award for Best Play in London. This spring it opened on Broadway at the Walter Kerr Theater, and it has been nominated for four Tony Awards, Best Play, Best Direction, Best Scenic Design, and Best Featured Actor for Jeremy Shemus. I'm very pleased to welcome both Jeremy Shemus and fellow cast members Crystal A. Dickinson to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly.
You did pronounce my name very well. I never thought I would correct you. It's an Olivier Award. It is.
Laurence
Olivier.
Yeah. Named after Laurence Olivier. I know. Right. I thought maybe it was named after
the Oliver musical.
Yeah, exactly. Crystal, is this your Broadway debut?
It is.
Were you in the original off-Broadway cast?
Yes, we all were, which is pretty fantastic and happens rarely from what I understand.
Yeah, usually in the transfer, somebody drops
gets
out
the axe.
Or gets the axe. So you were in it too, Jeremy.
We all were, yes.
Congratulations on the nomination.
Thank you.
When the play first opened in 2010, wasn't there immediately talk of a transfer to Broadway?
There was some talk. I mean, people, it was interesting. It was sort of, we learned a lot about the business of Broadway. A lot of producers came and said, that must be one of the best plays that I've seen in years, and yet there's no chance that it's coming to Broadway because it's sort of seven people that don't have marquee value.
But the Pulitzer must have helped.
The Pulitzer came after.
We closed after.
Yeah.
Closed.
It came almost a year later because we opened at the very beginning of 2010. And then the Pulitzer's announced the beginning of 2011 for 2010. So it was, we had closed a full year before.
So, Crystal, was it weird coming back to this play after you'd had time off doing other stuff?
Well, it was exciting. We didn't even know. I will say that I didn't know of a Broadway transfer once. But Pam contacted us a while ago and said, "Well, would you guys be interested in coming to L.A. and doing the play in L.A.?" And I was like, "Yes, I'd do the show in a cardboard box. I wouldn't care. I had so much fun doing it the first time, and I knew everybody was coming back."
That's
and
Pam
that was
McKinnon.
Like a bonus. Yes, Pam McKinnon,
who's nominated for a Tony as well.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
She's the director.
She is. She's outstanding.
So when you come back to a play, is it the same play or do you see it differently? Do you understand different things about the character you played a year before, 6 months before?
Yeah, I think it's the play really is somewhere deep inside of you, and then especially when you're with the same group, it sort of blossoms in a different way. It's sort of the winter, the bulb is there, and then this new sort of flower comes up. There's certain things that were planted and are very solid, and then a lot of things changed. People had children in the cast, and people matured in different ways. Mm-hmm. The play expanded and matured, and I think the play really works particularly on Broadway. It's a big play and it works in that house.
And you also have a bigger set, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Crystal, the play's two acts are set 50 years apart, 1959, then 2009, but in the same house.
Yes.
And it's been described as a kind of companion piece to Lorraine Hansberry's play, A Raisin in the Sun. Mm-hmm. Didn't that take place at 406 Clyburn Street?
Yes, and that is exactly where our play takes place, at 406 Clyburn Street. But I would say that the play, the Lorraine Hansberry play, is more of an entry point than it is something that you need to know about to. It's a fun surprise if you know about the play, but it's not a requirement, I would say.
But in that play, the younger family are planning to move into this house, house in a neighborhood that is all white.
Mm-hmm. Right, they're planning to move to 406 Clyburn Street. Their play takes place in Hamilton Park, and then Lorraine Hansberry made up a fictitious neighborhood in Chicago called Clyburn Park, which is sort of this white neighborhood that they're going to move to. So at the end of the play, there's this hope that they're going to move to Clyburn Park and their life is going to improve. So our play takes place at the house where they are eventually going to move. Yeah.
And each of the actors in the play, in the cast, plays two roles, mm-hmm. one in each act. In the first act, you play Carl, a representative from the Clyburn Park Neighborhood Organization.
Right.
And he was a character in
he was.
A Raisin
he's the,
in the
he's
Sun.
The only crossover character from the two plays.
And the only white character in
He's the
in
only
the
white
Hansberry
character
play.
In the Hansberry play, exactly. And he's a representative of the Neighborhood Association. And then comes back and to speak as a member of the neighborhood association again, but this time to the family who is selling the house to the younger family.
And then we fast forward to 50 years later, and I become the neighborhood association president.
Right. The neighborhood has become a black neighborhood primarily, and this white family is going to move in. And so the neighborhood association is now represented in the play by a black couple who's concerned about
it. So the first part is about white flight, and the second part is about gentrification.
There you go. Yeah. It's so interesting talking about this play. I just got excited all over again. It's so interesting. If I was listening to this, I would want to see this.
In Raisin, your character tries to bribe the youngers not to move into the house.
Right.
Here he's trying to persuade the white owners of the house, Bev and Russ, not to sell to the youngers.
Right.
That has to be odd, playing a character from somebody else's play in an odd way. Had you seen A Raisin in the Sun?
I had never seen A Raisin in the Sun. I'd read it in school and certainly knew it as a piece of literature, and I've never actually even seen the movie. And Bruce Norris, the writer, asked me not to see the movie just so that which was a good idea. I didn't need to necessarily have
so you would come to this
another performance.
Fresh.
Yeah, and I think. You know, Bruce's interpretation is like Crystal said, it's a jumping off point for the character. It's not necessarily an expansion of Hansberry's character.
And a fun fact about that is Bruce Norris, the playwright, actually did have to watch the movie Raisin in the Sun at his high school, which was very homogenous. And I think it was a way to educate the
in
Houston, Texas. So they watched it once a year, apparently.
And he related to Carl Lindner's character.
Yes.
Now, he's an actor turned playwright.
Yeah.
Do you see a difference in the way an actor approaches writing dialogue?
I don't see a difference in that as much as I see a difference in how we communicate. I think it's easier to talk to Bruce because when we were working on the play the first time, he would just flat out say, well, how's this working? And he also had a way to stay away, too. He didn't give us too much. Sometimes I think playwrights are so attached to what they've written down that they see it a certain way in their head and they want you to do it that way. But Bruce was never like that.
I think Bruce, he's incredibly smart about the structure of the play. The play kind of folds in on itself and it's like sort of an origami, the way that the first act and the second act fold upon each other. But at the same time, I think as an actor, I think his strength as a writer is he really writes these characters with very, very specific voices, and he's not always so interested in plot as he is interested in character. And this play is so much about how our character and our ability to communicate or lack of ability to communicate really makes things happen and changes history, really.
Mm-hmm.
All this week we have been covering a lot of theater productions, and you can find interviews that we've had with Tony nominees on our show page. Today I'm speaking with Jeremy Shamus and Crystal Dickinson from Clyburn Park, which has gotten a Pulitzer already in addition to having garnered Tony nominations. For ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Crystal, in the first act, you play Francine, who's working as a maid for Bev and Russ. Mm-hmm. Is she meant to be analogous to Lena, the matriarch in Raisin? Who was also a domestic?
I don't think so. I think that was just the nature of the time. You know, that's what a lot of black women did. They worked in people's houses for a living. And my grandmother was one of them. And I think I took more inspiration from my own grandmother than I did from the play.
Although you do play a woman named Lena in the second one.
Yes.
So Bruce Norris was making a reference.
That's absolutely right. So I'm the great niece of Lena Younger.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Jeremy, in the second act, you play Steve, who, with his wife Lindsay, has just bought the house and plans to tear it down and build a bigger one.
Right.
What does he want to rebuild?
With a koi pond in the backyard.
Now, what's wrong with just fixing up this house? It seems like a nice enough house.
Well,
thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, she's in character. Well, Annie Parise, who plays my wife, she makes a speech about why, and she says, you know, there's a crack in the subfloor. And, you know, for various reasons, you know, and she says the house is so charming, but, you know, for various sort of economic reasons, it just seemed easier to tear it down and build a new house.
Well, I thought of the house as one of the characters in the play.
The house is the main character in the play, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So is the second act, in a way, a mirror image of the first, with the black families trying to prevent the white interlopers from destroying the neighborhood as they see it?
Yeah, I don't know if Lena feels so much as they're going to destroy the neighborhood as much as I think that she has a commitment to respecting what people have gone through in that neighborhood. And to keep the neighborhood in a historic fashion is a way to do that, to honor what people have had to endure. And to put a McMansion there seems to say that it's not important anymore. So I think that that's what she's more concerned with.
Well, although Lena and Francine are different people, and the same goes for Carl and Steve, are we meant to see them as the same kinds of people?
That's a wonderful question. I like to think of the first act and the second act in terms of my characters as a progression of a culture. I think of it that way, I do.
Well, Lena, the black woman in 2009, is able to speak her mind while Francine has to hold her tongue in the face of racism. And you do a lot of acting with your eyes.
Yeah.
There are any number of times when your character either wants to talk when you're the maid, but bites her tongue and says things with her eyes that we, the audience, see but others don't catch.
Yeah.
And in the second act, when you are more outspoken but people won't let you talk at one point, again, you do all those things with your eyes.
Yeah.
That's not written in the script.
That's not written in the script, but that's what's wonderful about Bruce's writing. I mean, he leaves space for you to do the things that need to be. I mean, well, to me, it feels like what's between the lines is just as important. In a play about communication, what you don't say is just as important as what you do say.
The transformation of the set between the first and second acts has been the subject of a lot of press. Can you tell us a bit about how it was accomplished?
Well, it's pretty incredible, the crew, what the crew does in 13 minutes now.
Yeah.
It used to take a lot longer, but they've whittled it down to 13 minutes. And they're, you know, I mean, they tell the story of what happened in the house for 50 years. So there's a completely different staircase, although, I mean, it looks the same, and yet every detail about it is different.
The wallpaper, the front door has different numbers on it.
The front door is a completely different door. Actually, the doors become metal as opposed to wood, which says something about the neighborhood. And the windows have all changed, and the wallpaper, a lot of them are huge magnets. So they take off the magnets of the old wallpaper, put on some new torn wallpaper that has some graffiti on it. They strew trash around, but a lot of the huge physical things are incredibly ingenious because the Walter Kerr doesn't have an incredible amount of space, and so it's very efficient the way they move everything around.
Now, in the first act, racial matters are discussed mostly in code. In the second, there is an exchange of some quite nasty racial jokes, I guess, because we've come a long way.
I'm not sure. I mean,
was it uncomfortable at all to tell those jokes?
The both of you tell.
Yeah,
we both tell some pretty rough jokes.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say that, though. I think in the first act, things that are fairly racist are said fairly openly because they don't feel racist at the time. It's only in retrospect that we realize how backwards some of those things are.
No, but people keep on trying to find euphemisms.
I thought that was the beginning of the second act. People speak a lot in euphemisms, and they manage to talk almost three quarters of the second act without ever mentioning race or talking about it, and yet it seems like it's sort of a central topic. But then once the sort of cat is out of the bag and the cork is off the bottle, then some jokes are told that are pretty rough.
Jeez.
And we're not going to ask you to repeat them on the air.
No,
I'm not
sure
the FCC would approve of that.
there's an idea that off-Broadway attracts more New Yorkers, regular theater goers, while Broadway gets more tourists. Have you found Broadway audiences reacting to the play in the same way that the off-Broadway theater goers did?
I think the marvelous thing about doing this play every night is that has changed every single day since we've done this play. We can never anticipate or expect the reactions from the audience because the idea of race is so loaded that and whoever's in the audience that day and how they feel about it, that's what shifts the audience every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting.
And do you get oohs and groans different ones each night?
Some nights you get an ooh where there was a laugh, and sometimes you get a laugh where there was a groan. And
and sometimes you get booed.
And it's
really?
It's sort of a roller coaster.
It's good.
Yeah, at one point somebody yelled in the audience, said, "Oh my God!"
Oh yeah.
Oh, you were there. That was a couple nights ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had all kinds of reactions. Once when I started to tell the joke, somebody just screamed, "Yes, yes!" I didn't even say the punchline yet, but they were just ready.
But maybe they knew that joke. Not only my two guests, wonderful in this play, but also Brendan Griffin, Damon Gupton, Christina Kirk, Annie Parisi,
Frank Wood.
And Crystal Dickinson and Jeremy Shamus. The play has been extended?
Yes, until August 15th.
Exactly.
Any chance of it turning into an open run?
I'm not sure. I cannot speak to that. But it feels like a play that, you know, really should be seen and that should have a life that's important. I feel like people, and saying that it's important makes it sound like it's medicine, but it's incredibly entertaining, and I feel like I've gotten more phone calls and emails about people telling me that they've been talking about it for days and it's changed the way that they've thought about things, and that's a lot to say about theater.
Well, good luck at the Tonys.
Thank you, sir.
Four Tony nominations for the play, including one for you, Jeremy Shamus.
Yes.
And you deserved one, Crystal, that's for sure. Crystal
A.
Dickinson. We're talking about Clybourne Park, which is currently at the Walter Kerr Theater. It's been a pleasure having you.
Same here.
Very nice to meet you. Thank you.